Welcome to the Americans for Prosperity radio show. Americans for Prosperity is Mississippi's leading grassroots organization dedicated to promoting economic freedom and personal liberty. Americans for Prosperity advocates for limited government, free market policies, and empowering individuals. Join us on 1039 WYAB every Tuesday morning at 9 a.m. for the Americans for Prosperity radio show.
You have tuned in to the Americans for Prosperity Hour. We're doing things a little bit different today. This is Clay. I'll be twisting the knobs for Starla and company. I've got them both here on the phone. Starla, I'm going to let you take it over from here.
All right, Clay. Thanks for working this all out for us today with some logistics on a very important day for the Mississippi legislature. We have on the line with us also Cade Yates, who's our deputy state director, and Cade is often seen around the Capitol on pretty much a daily basis in the past few weeks. And so, Cade, talk to us a little bit about today. It's March 5th, right? And so that's a deadline day. Let's talk about what that deadline means.
Yeah. So good morning, everyone. Glad to be on this morning. March 5th is the first major deadline day besides, you know, drafting. And so we are actually in a place where if a bill does not come out of committee today in their own chamber, in the chamber it came from, then the bill will die. So we have a lot of bills today that, whether good or bad, are going to meet the first threshing point of the session. And, you know, today we've got some really important bills, but if they don't come out today, then they won't come out at all.
Okay, well, that's an important deadline, right? And we're hopeful that a lot of good policy does make it across the line today. Certainly, we've been supporting several things this year around education. We know the fate of some of those bills at this point. Around the House Bill 1449 right now, it has come out of committee. It looks like it's headed towards a study commission. And so it's still got another hurdle today, that it has to meet with appropriations. But we're hopeful that some movement can be seen there. There's some other education bills that are coming out or hopefully coming out across the line that we're supportive of. So, we continue to want the best outcome for all of the families and students here in the state of Mississippi so that people are not relegated to the educational outcome by their zip code, right? And by that, one of the things that we've been engaging in with our internal partner, Yes Every Kid, is the No More Lines campaign. And so if you have an opportunity and you're interested in that, check it out. To Yes Every, search for Yes Every Kid. I promise it'll come up. Take a look at what they're doing there on that side of things, and you can check it out on social media. We've certainly shared a lot about the campaign on both our Facebook and Twitter accounts. Cade, one of the things that's really important to people in the healthcare sphere is certificate of need, and I know you've shared with us in the past what that means, but talk to us a little, in general, what is certificate of need? What are we looking at when we talk about repealing it, and why that's important to healthcare here in Mississippi?
Yeah, so generally, certificate of need, the idea of behind certificate of need is if a company in the healthcare space wishes to come to Mississippi or a existing company in the state of Mississippi want to open up medical facilities or expand existing medical facilities, they have to go before a government board and jump through a lot of hoops and prove that there is a need in that community, in the community they are wishing to put that facility, that there's a need for them there. And what does this need truly mean? Is there another competitor there that they are going to, compete with and cause that competitor to have, there is stress that comes with bringing in new providers into an area. But as we've seen in the state of Mississippi, we need as many medical facilities as possible. And also we have to point out that if someone's coming to Mississippi, they're going to do their due diligence when it comes to understanding that there is a need in that community. Because if there's not enough people to support the service that they're providing, then they're not going to come there. And really, this is just government protectionism for, you know, the existing companies that have, you know, gone through the process and really been in the state for a long time. And, you know, we appreciate, you know, all of the current providers, but right now what we need is flexibility in our system, and keeping certificate of need laws in place does not allow for flexibility. And also one other point I'd like to make is when you go through this process, you are looking at, you know, I've heard the average is $150,000 to open up a new facility in Mississippi. Now it covers everything from MRI, CT machines, all kinds of equipment to mental health and substance abuse facilities to hospital and hospital size investments, you know, dialysis. The list goes on and on. There's actually 19 areas that are covered. And we are in a state where, you know, if someone really sees the need to come into a community and open up a new medical facility, I think it's time for us to allow the free market to work. And that means better flexibility for the healthcare system, better options for you as the patient, and it allows for Mississippi to really grow our health outcomes and to see a healthier Mississippi when we can see new medical facilities coming in. Plus, our current healthcare situation on the national level, you know, people are looking for new opportunities when it comes to experimental work or you know, fighting back against the non-traditional, this is how we've always done things mentality when it comes to healthcare. We need to see some changes in our laws to allow for folks to get the care they need.
Yeah, I think, you know, you hit on something there. It's how we've always done things, right? Well, you know, when this was first implemented, it had an intent that was supposed to be good in helping out what that would look like, right? What, you know, like, so that we didn't get into certain situations. But, you know, the world has changed since then. It's been a long time, and these laws have proven to drive costs up. They've proven to, you know, eliminate that competition. And we all know if you're a free market principled individual, right, and it doesn't matter what political party you're in, if you support that type of economy, right, competition is important to driving costs down. And, you know, Kay, you recently testified in a committee, and I was there that day for that testimony, and there were a myriad of people who came before the committee and talked about different things. Some were defending their right to protectionism, if you will, to be the only provider of certain care in the state. And, you know, I didn't have an easy time with their argument because I felt like it was just protecting, you know, their ability to be the one and only provider. But there were people who testified, and one of the things that struck me was one individual who, you know, was wanting to provide a service. They already, I guess, have a couple of facilities. They wanted to expand to a third, if I understand correctly. You can correct me if I'm wrong on that. But they were spending or had spent and just finally, you know, gave up on the process, $450,000. And it was the idea that the people who didn't want them to compete in their marketplace is who was rallying against them to shut them down. So I think it's important for people to understand competitors, right? Actual competitors get to sort of, I don't want to say help because it's not helpful in this process. Can you kind of talk a little bit about what that looks like? I mean, you know, how we've seen that in the past?
Yeah, so, I mean, I think that's a great example, and that was one of the honors of speaking there at the Capitol that day, was getting to hear other folks who are in this fight. And, you know, in that, you know, public committee meeting, we heard of the story of a existing medical provider wanting to expand into the Delta, where we've always been told no one wants to go there, no one wants to provide care there, so we have to keep these laws in place. And when in reality, these folks wanted to go up there, they wanted to offer a high-quality product, and it did cost them $500,000, and then eventually they just gave up because at the end of the day, they knew it was going to cost them more time, more money, and time is money in this process. And like you mentioned, I mean, the reason they had this big of a fight, you know, the And I'll admit, sometimes the paperwork side is expensive, but that's not the part that is the hardest part about this. It is when your competitors are allowed to testify against you before this committee and lock you up in litigation and paperwork, trying to lawyer their way into making sure you never come to compete against them. And that's allowed in a lot of states that still have certificate of need laws. But I mean, at the end of the day, what we found is 100 million Americans do not sit under these laws. Over 100 million Americans, you know, states like Texas, South Dakota, Wyoming, New Hampshire, all are without certificate of need laws. And what we've seen is a flexibility for not only patients and not only providers, but also when it comes to our workforce, when it comes to nurses and doctors and PAs and all these folks who work in the healthcare field, they're able to compete and have higher wages. And so what we've seen is when these big hospital groups join together and fight a new facility coming into the state of Mississippi, it's costing not only you, not only your provider, not only the nurses, it's costing Mississippi and all people who are going to partake in our healthcare system. It's going to cost us the opportunity to seek a personal option when it comes to healthcare.
Yeah, and it baffles my mind. I know this year you've traveled around the state and you've spoken to several groups about certificate of need laws. A lot of people, you know, just didn't know these laws exist. And certainly we've been out trying to educate the public about them and understand. And I to this day, not only whether it was here or even when I was down in Florida fighting this battle, I have yet to really be in a room, unless it was just a person associated, right, with this competition. I've yet to be in a room that in about a 15-minute time span of explaining what certificate of need is and how it impacts healthcare and competition, people just are like, why do we have this, right? And I think even leadership in this state is, you know, a lot of people are saying, why do we have this? And so, you know, the hope is that we get some bills moving today and that some of those bills come out and we have an opportunity to continue work at. We'd love to see full repeals, but there is one area in particular. We had a bill last year. There's a bill again this year around mental health and substance abuse, right? In Mississippi, we know that these are at crisis level, I guess is a good way to describe it. And so what are your thoughts on a bill today we might see come, you know, that we'd like to see come out of committee today?
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, we have a House and a Senate version of a very similar bill. Each of them jointly address mental health and substance abuse, but the Senate bill also brings in dialysis. And, you know, these are the House bill, 848. You know, we are very thankful for Lee Yancey as a sponsor who's pushed this bill year after year, and we're at the point today where I think we'll really see movement. Because when it comes to these areas, people don't realize that if you go before the con board on any of these areas, they automatically get approved without question unless, you know, a competitor comes in and says something, or if, it's almost automatically approved, but the problem is the cost. The cost prohibits a lot of folks from coming in because they don't want to risk $150,000, you know, $100,000 on legal
right.
fees and everything. Tying that up. And so today, hopefully, we'll see them come out. And then also SB 2887 and the Senate bill, Senator Cole Boyd authored that one. And so we're just really thankful. And I think we will see the first right step in the right direction to making healthcare personal again, to working on, and I always say this, these areas of mental health and substance abuse help our police officers and generally help public safety. To actually be able to get people the resources they need to get the healing in their lives versus just, you know, putting our officers, especially in the jails, in a dangerous situation, trying to take care of people that...
Right, I know. To deal with something that's not part of your job. Well, Cade, we got to head to a break here, but I want to thank you for joining us today. Good luck at the Capitol. I'll probably see you up there later today, but... let's hope that some of these good policies get out of committee today and we wind up with some good things for Mississippians coming out of the legislative session as we move forward. Thanks for joining us.
Join Americans for Prosperity Tuesdays, 9 a.m. right here on 103.9 WYAB for an hour of local and national guests talking about policies impacting all Mississippians. AFP Mississippi looks forward to sharing stories and updating you on state and federal government policies with insightful commentary. Join AFP Mississippi weekly on Tuesdays at 9 a.m. on 103.9 WYAB. This ad was paid for by Americans for Prosperity.
You're listening to the Americans for Prosperity weekly radio program. Now, back to the show.
All right, welcome back to the Americans for Prosperity Hour here on WYAB. We've got Miss Starla on the line with us. Hey, Starla, you there?
Yes, I'm here. Thanks, Clay. Clay, I just want to remind everybody, you can find a lot of information locally for our Mississippi chapter on Facebook and Twitter. So Americans for Prosperity Mississippi and AFP at AFP underscore MS. We generally post a lot of, I would say, educational articles, if you will, polling information. We're going to talk a little bit about a poll we posted this morning here in a moment. And some general overall stuff that you can find out, our events, what we're doing around the state. Coming up in the second half of the hour, we're going to have Stone Clanton's going to join us. He's a grassroots engagement director for the Central Mississippi area. We're going to talk a little bit about some upcoming opportunities with our Grassroots Leadership Academy and our education and training teams that we're kicking off April 1st, and we'll go throughout the year. There's going to be some great classes. If you're somebody who's interested in grassroots engagement, you want to be a better activist at what you do, we're going to put together some great classes to help you with that. And so we're going to be talking about how you can engage in that. We'll have more than one location around the state, and we'll be continuing and running these along with some boot camp versions of it in a lot of places this year. So we're excited about this program and some other pieces that will provide people a way to be leaders in their community and for grassroots. And so we're really excited about that piece. But last week, as you know, we had on the show, Clay, we had Russ Latino was in the studio with us from Magnolia Tribune and Scott Cinderino from the Foundation for Government Accountability. And we talked about Medicaid expansion. There's a House bill out there, House Bill 1725, that has passed out of committee and passed out of the floor in a very rapid and quick manner that it came out. One of the things that we have opposed about the bill is literally the fact that we just can't afford this in Mississippi. Like, there's a cost factor to this that doesn't often get talked about. And this morning, one of the things that we saw, and I've already posted some stuff on social media about it, and we'll continue to do that throughout the day, but is Magnolia Tribune conducted a poll. And they did that in conjunction with the Mason-Dixon polling and strategy, which has been around for a long time in Mississippi. They're, respected for their polling capabilities. And so it's an interesting poll, but I would say this. Medicaid expansion does not appear to be popular with a lot of the constituents for a lot of the lawmakers out there. And so, I took a look at some things in this poll this morning, and, one of the things that people really want to see, and I think this is where one of the highest pieces came out, was in the poll, they asked a number of questions around, Medicaid expansion and the labor force, because what we tend to hear about this bill, about what makes it so great, is that people who will be eligible for this will have a work requirement. But the truth of the matter is the work requirement, not only from the Biden administration, has been shot down. So there's, something called a CMS, right? It's a waiver to allow states to expand Medicaid and ask people to have a certain amount of work requirements. But the Biden administration, when they took over, some of those that have been implemented by the Trump administration were repealed and pulled back. And they haven't been issuing them, and they've been very much above board about being against it. And so the idea is here in this bill that, you know, if they don't have a work requirement by a certain day, it just becomes Medicaid expansion. But in the poll, 90% of Republican respondents to this poll said they would oppose Medicaid expansion if the primary beneficiaries of the policy were people who refuse to work. And so this work requirement seems to be one of the ways that, you know, that this is being touted as being a good piece of policy, yet there's no guarantee on this part. And I think it's important for people to understand that. I don't think that this idea that it's an automatic, that all these people are going to, you know, suddenly be on Medicaid expansion and will continue to work or will be required to work to be in this piece. And so for a lot of people, that's a problem, right? I don't, you know, I'm not sure about your opinions on that, but it's, for us, we don't see it as good policy. We also, something else that I thought was pretty interesting, you know, right now in Mississippi, there's 140,000 people who are in a subsidized private plan that's part of the ACA exchange. And those people would actually be forced off those plans and onto Medicaid if we had a full expansion path. So you take the number of people we have now, you take the process of what we're hearing out of the Division of Medicaid and needing a $500 million for what we already have to kind of keep it moving. And then you think about adding 140,000 people that will be forced off of these plans into this expansion, because a majority of the people, according to the article they put out, a majority of the people under 100% of the federal policy level that would become eligible for this Medicaid do not work already. So if we don't have that work requirement, we're talking about putting all these extra people now. If you're someone who truly needs Medicaid, right, we understand the intent of Medicaid. We understand that there are people in scenarios where that, you know, safety net has made sense for a lot of time. But when you start crowding all these people into a not-so-great program to begin with, right, a lot of flaws within parts of the system and how it operates, and it's a top-down government healthcare plan, which doesn't seem to be popular with people in general. When you think about that and putting this in, you know, Clay, I don't know about you, but if I'm someone who legitimately has a need for Medicaid, has a disability that doesn't allow them much other option. We're seeing in Indiana right now, because of incredible cost overruns in that state, that people are, you know, the legislature there is literally trying to figure out what services they're going to cut. And so for a lot of people, I think this is something that really needs to be considered.
So the way it's being sold to us, this isn't really costing us any money, is not true? The government's saying, the federal government's getting up, 90% of it, and then they're taxing healthcare providers for the rest?
Right. There's a definite cost to this. And, a lot of people in this poll, 91% of respondents said that, providing free health insurance to people who, refuse to work will actually worsen the state's labor force participation rate. So, we're not seeing this as a good thing. We're seeing this as a bad thing. And I think that it's important for people to take a look at this poll. It's you can find it at MagnoliaTribune.com. You can find it on our social media platform. We encourage people to take a read of those questions and see where you fit in that. And if you feel like after reading this that you don't believe like we do that this is one of those bills that should pass, is that you reach out to your legislature and you voice, as a constituent, that you voice to them this issue. You know, I've seen a few things out there, you know, kind of painting this as a, you know, a great thing. But look, there's that old adage, lipstick on a pig is, you know, it's still a pig, right? And so this is going to be a costly thing for taxpayers. I encourage people to do their research to learn more about what Medicaid expansion would cost and mean to our state, and understand that there's not a guarantee for that work requirement. I think we're coming up on a break here.
Yeah, but we've got Stone on hold too.
We'll come back, and Stone Clanton will be joining us, and we'll talk a little bit about some grassroots classes we're going to be sponsoring here across the state.
All right, we'll be right back with the Americans for Prosperity Hour here on 103.9 FM, WYAB.
Join Americans for Prosperity Tuesdays, 9 a.m. right here on 103.9 WYAB for an hour of local and national guests talking about policies impacting all Mississippians. AFP Mississippi looks forward to sharing stories and updating you on state and federal government policies with insightful commentary. Join AFP Mississippi weekly on Tuesdays at 9 a.m. on 103.9 WYAB. This ad was paid for by Americans for Prosperity.
You're listening to the Americans for Prosperity Weekly Radio Program. Now, back to the show.
Welcome back in to the Americans for Prosperity Hour here. Let's take it straight back to Starla and Stone. Guys, I'm handing it over to you.
All right. Thanks a lot, Clay. And, Clay, one thing I failed to mention last hour, there's a great article out for people to read about what happened in Indiana. It's actually a WSJA, a Wall Street Journal article. We have it up on Twitter. We've reposted that. It's an op-ed about how the disabled will actually pay for Indiana's Medicaid forecasting error. I mean, they've got a $1 billion hole, right? So, but we'll work to get that up. A link to that article up on Facebook as well, in case people don't have Twitter or have access to it. But if you do, you can find us at AFP_MF on Twitter and take a read. I think it's important for people to understand that these forecasting errors down the road have real implications that affect people who, unfortunately, Medicaid was intended for. So I think it's a great example for people to understand how we've not seen any state really stay on track for their costs. There's been a cost, overrun nationally in these states, and now it's time to have to cut the program back, and that's unfortunate because there are going to be people who really needed it that are going to be caught up in this dilemma between this gap, as we call it, in healthcare. Stone, glad you're joining us today. Stone Clanton is our grassroots engagement director for Central Mississippi, or as I always tell him, the I-20 corridor, right, and that thing. And so we're working on a project this year that's going to bring, I think, continuous education to people out there for grassroots. And it's a certification program, actually, to be exact, the Grassroots Leadership Academy. You actually went through this program yourself at one point, correct?
Correct. And we are bringing the Grassroots Leadership Academy back into full force in the state. We have had them in the state over the past couple of years, past few years, in some capacity, but we are bringing back those certification projects.
Well, that is good news, and I'm glad to hear it. I know I've been on several calls with you guys this week, and some of our team out of our national team for the Grassroots Leadership Academy and our education and training team. And so one of the things that we have is a capability that we can bring to the state, of trainers who travel all over the country talking to grassroots activists and volunteers. So that's how you started with us, right? And now actually guiding the, other people through that process. But, I myself took several of those classes, went through 3 certifications while I was down in Florida as a staff member. And one of the things that I will say is that the amount of knowledge that people will gain, whether you are working to do things alongside us and help advance the good policies that we're talking about and how to work through that, or whether you're, you know, heading up an organization yourself who, you know, is maybe a coalition partner or wants to engage in a particular type of policy. The training provides a lot of information on best practices and how to do that. Talk to us a little about some of the classes that people can expect in this program.
Yes, Darla, and as you mentioned, the Grassroots Leadership Academy is kind of a segue that I had into the organization itself. Prior to that, I was volunteering some, and I really didn't know what all that the organization had to offer until I attended one of these Grassroots Leadership Academies. And in essence, what I think that these classes can do for people is turn concerned citizens into advocates for liberty. Because they will provide you with the skills that you need to successfully communicate your concern about a particular issue. They can even go as far as teaching you how to organize around that issue and drive societal change in the right direction. But some of the classes that we offer that we're going to start off with, and we're going to be starting in Starkville, I believe, or Oxford.
Yeah.
Correct me if I'm wrong, Starkville.
No, Starkville, April 1st, we're going to be kicking off in Starkville. That's our initial class, and we'll have more than one location every week going forward. Some of these will be the one night per week for about 5 weeks. You'll come out, we'll have dinner, we'll have some education and fellowship, and one of the things we'll see out of that is the groups of individuals actually form together within, you know, form their own community. And I know people to this day who, as much as, you know, 7-8 years ago, were in some of these classes, and some of them gone on to run for office. They're, you know, in legislative office. We have people who opened their own nonprofit organizations. We have people that continue to volunteer with us for, you know, a lot of years now, who went through this certification and have become what we've often called a social change entrepreneur, right? It's someone who's really that, that activist who's at a level, that they are influential and they can influence, their community and their legislators. And so we're hoping to build out of this program a solid group of individuals statewide. I think we have another program that we're initiating as part of this that'll come out of these classes, but it'll give people, they'll be card-carrying members, as I like to say, with the way the program is, to be ambassadors, right? And to be out there things we do. I got off track there a little bit, but let's talk about some of the classes, like some of what we'll see in some of this first round.
Yeah, so there are technically three certifications that can be achieved through this program, but the first one will be called the Grassroots Advocate Program. And essentially what that is going to provide attendees with some of the basic knowledge and skills that they need to become social change entrepreneurs in their own communities and be better advocates for liberty and freedom, even at the local level all the way up to the federal level. And a little bit about what you get out of that is you're going to get our vision for a better society, a vision that empowers the individuals to be leaders in their own communities, but also leaders in their government, because we're government by the people, Starla. Eventually you'll be, we'll talk a little bit about what motivates your neighbor and community building. Storytelling is a huge piece in this, because once you figure out your why you care about your community, why you care about an issue, that's what people care about. And because we're a storytelling people, before we had written books and everything, people told stories and they prick people's hearts through that. Next, there'll be an advocacy toolbox. And what that is basically is just different strategies one can take to different issues and change, and then eventually impacting your elected officials. And that looks different from a few different angles. But that's where we're going to be starting out first. Then you'll get into the Grassroots Mobilizer, And then eventually you'll be a grassroots leader, and that's at that third level. I do think that these are incredibly powerful classes because, as you mentioned, these little communities kind of build within the classes. And I know you've seen it many times over throughout your years at the organization. But the time that I took at the time, we were calling it grassroots GLA level one classes, and that's basically the that first level, which is the grassroots advocate certification. But I saw communities build within that very class, and they're still strong today. They're doing things. And I think the beauty to some of these classes is we are going to be building communities around different issues. And honestly, even if it's something that AFP isn't working on, or if there's something else that you're passionate about, you can take this knowledge to anything. It doesn't even necessarily have to be a policy or political issue. It can be just learning communication skills and conflict resolution skills, and I think it's incredibly impactful.
Yeah, and I know, you know, one of the classes that I've always enjoyed is, you know, how to talk to your legislator. And so,
yep.
You know, look, we encourage people to call their legislators all the time, whether it's to support a bill or oppose a bill. You know, there's generally two options, right, for or against. But we generally try to supply people with facts and knowledge around the legislation from our point of view and why, you know, we want people to understand why we oppose something as well as why we support it, right? I think it's important for us to understand. But we also want people to respectfully call their legislators. We want them to be armed with knowledge, not, you know, be, you know, armed with a civility issue. And so that, you know, it's important for people to be able to understand how to do that and do that effectively. And I think that, that's a very important class that will be part of this. And, you know, and this will guide people to be, you know, as we, you know, whether it's a little bit of this session, or, you know, we may be at the very toward the end of that. But as we build into 2025, I think it's going to allow people to be more capable at having those conversations. You know, sometimes people themselves have a great idea for a bill, right? There's a problem, there's an issue in their community, and they want to go and speak to their legislature about that issue. And often sometimes people, you know, people get confused, like, what is state policy? What is federal policy? What levels of government should you be talking to? What is a local piece? And so we want to make sure that people are to be the best at and have the best practices for that. So I'm looking forward to starting this. I know, like you said, Starkville, April 1st. And then I believe you're going to, I think it's April 2nd. Is that correct?
Yes, April 2nd will be in Lauderdale County. And then we're going to eventually, of course, come back over to the Jackson metro area. That plan is being worked out now.
Okay, wonderful. Well, good to hear that. I know that we're looking at some other locations around the state, like Brookhaven, Mississippi. We're looking
yep.
at, you know, at sort of southwest area. We're looking at areas along the coast. And I want to say this to people out there who might be listening. You know, if you've got a community of people that you think would benefit from this in your local community, it doesn't have to be a huge metropolitan area for us to come and do these classes, right? We're not doing them as an individual basis. We need a group of individuals. But if you in your community feel like, you know, if there's somebody there leading and you've got a group of people that are passionate about some of the things here in the state, I mean, we're not unopposed to being in a small town versus a large metropolitan area to hold these. And in fact, we want to get into some of these smaller communities and start talking to people, because I think often sometimes they get left behind, right? We forget that, you know, the small town itself has, you know, is just as impacted by policy as, you know, Jackson, Mississippi, right? So good, we're happy to be out in some of these smaller communities, and, you know, this will be done with our, the Grassroots Leadership Academy is actually part of the Americans for Prosperity Foundation capabilities. So we're actually able to even go into, you know, if there are faith-based communities that have concerns around, you know, like maybe it's education, maybe there's a group of people or church communities that support education savings accounts or want to see better policy around education and want to advocate for that. Well, we can also, we also can work in that community. And so we're excited to be able to partner with a lot of different people around these classes. So you're going to kick off in Lauderdale County, which is great. My home county, as I say, from Meridian. But Stone, I want to thank you for joining us today. If people want to call you, what is your phone number real quick? Because we've got to wrap it up. I got a hard stop here.
Yeah, it's 601-300-9536. 601-300-9536. And call me anytime you want.
All right. Sounds good. We look forward to seeing these up on our social platforms. All right, we're going to wrap it up here. Thanks for listening to the Americans for Prosperity Hour. I'm Starla Brown, State Director, and we'll see you next Tuesday.
Join Americans for Prosperity Tuesdays, 9 a.m. right here on 103.9 WYAB for an hour of local and national guests talking about policies impacting all Mississippians. AFP Mississippi looks forward to sharing stories and updating you on state and federal government policies with insightful commentary. Join AFP Mississippi weekly on Tuesdays at 9 a.m. on 103.9 WYAB. This ad was paid for by Americans for Prosperity.
You're listening to the Americans for Prosperity weekly radio program. Now, back to the show.
All right, guys, we appreciate y'all tuning in. Be sure to tune back in next week, 9 to 10 a.m. and every Tuesday for the Americans for Prosperity Hour right here on WYAB. Be sure to check out Americans for Prosperity Mississippi on Facebook. See you next week. Thanks for tuning in.